Hi everyone, and welcome to Drukhammer Radio. I'm your co-host today, Deniz. As always, we are very grateful to have Daishi with us. How are you, Daishi?
I'm doing great. I look forward to talking to you. Thank you for having me.
Okay, great. So today's topic is spiritual knowledge and how to gain it. So my first question is, what do we mean by spiritual knowledge and how does our school look at it?
We see knowledge gained in two ways. One is through the worldly way, which would be the way that we typically use the intellectual faculties of the mind to mostly remember things and then later put them together in variations, and that's called creativity, right? So if I learn a bunch of sample data, like a bunch of shapes and a bunch of colors, I can then take those shapes and colors stored in my memory and then regurgitate them in a creative way later, but I can only work from the data that I get in this memory bank. I can only work from the information that I know. I can't create anything new, something from nothing. In spiritual terms, knowledge is a direct experience. It's a sharing of attributes. It's a way for us to merge with something so thoroughly that we actually share attributes with that thing. So it shares with us and we share with it. And only through that merging can we really know something. And so the knowledge is different in the mystical path than it is in the worldly path. And it's really important to understand the differences. So we don't memorize or intellectualize or study so much in the mystical path, at least from our school's perspective. We merge and have direct experiences with things and we know them personally, not because somebody else told us about it or because we read about it or heard a lecture about it, etc., but completely because we've experienced it ourselves. And I would liken it to the difference between discussing the ingredients or the way in which ice cream is made as opposed to actually eating ice cream. Those are two totally different things, right? So one is a very deep and intimate knowing. That would be the mystical side. And one is a studying, intellectualizing, and sort of the way that the world looks at knowing things, which is by seeing it from the outside. And so in that regard, there's a galactic difference between those two things. So if I want to know a flower, in the world, we cut it up and we look at how it's built and the way that the molecules form and the way that photogenesis affects it and how it grows and the soil and water and sunlight and everything, all the aspects of it. In the mystical side, we become a flower. And in becoming a flower, we understand what it is to be a flower, and we know a flower much more deeply and inherently than we would from the worldly side, which is studying it from the outside. So merging is the mystical side, and dividing or contemplating from the outside is more in line with the world.
Wonderful. Why do we need spiritual knowledge on our journey?
That's a great question. And that's a really beautiful way to approach the subject of spirituality, because it's all really based in that. Why do I need to know something? Why do I need to know anything? It seems to us that we couldn't possibly know everything. If the universe is infinite and there are infinite possibilities, then trying to learn about the universe like right out of the gate would seem to be a erroneous plan of action, because we can't ever know it all. So why don't we just give up trying to know it? It's too big. It's too much. So if it's infinite, let's just stop here and forget trying to know anything. We're never going to achieve the goal of knowing. But in fact, spiritually, we want to experience phenomenon. And the whole reason we're in this world of dualistic perception is to experience phenomenon so we can understand from its mirror image perspective, from a dual perspective, from a polarized perspective, what is the nature of light? What is the nature of the substance of energy and vibration that make us up? And we can't possibly do that being completely overwhelmed with just a unifying light. So if there's just source, for example, like if you take a blank piece of paper and you just say, here's all you could ever know about everything right there on that blank piece of paper, we would say, okay, that's too much. I don't know how to break that down and quantify that or understand that. I have no way of realizing what that means. So we just take a black marker and draw a line down the middle of the page. And then we say, okay, now sort of some of that white page is gone. And because some of the white page is gone, I can now relate with it as the number one. And I can create a character to it and associate some terms and definitions. And then later, maybe I can make a four-sided square. And then I could look at that square and say, okay, that now we've taken away some more of the light of that page, more of the white part of that page. And now I can determine through terms and ideas that that's a square. And so every time I pull away some of the white paper, I can understand ways that the white paper manifests different ideas and concepts through it. But the odd thing about this kind of intellectual learning is that I could never really know the white sheet. I can only know ways that the white sheet isn't. You know, it's a little bit strange, right? But if I take away parts of the white sheet, I can only understand what the white sheet isn't. It isn't a square. It isn't a one. It isn't those things. So from a human perspective, and this can go very deep, and we obviously don't have time for that, but from the human's perspective and the intellectual mind perspective, we can never accomplish the goal of trying to understand the infinite nature of reality. It's obvious. That should be clear. Just from knowing what it's not, we're never going to get to what it is. So it's kind of a fruitless act. But it doesn't stop us, right? We'll still smash molecules and we have desire to know it. So we keep driving to figure out what it is through what it's not. But the ancient mystics said that there was an easier way. There's an easier way. And that is to understand the nature of how we're filtering the perceptions of the light in the first place. In other words, it's not the light that has an issue. Understanding the light is not the issue. Understanding our own filters and the way that we perceive the light is the issue. And instead of using those faulty perceptions to try to investigate the light, we simply clear up the faulty perceptions and the light makes total sense. So it reverses the way we perceive and project this idea of investigation. So instead of looking at the light through the lenses of the faulty self-filter and trying to figure out what's wrong with the light or how the light is good or bad or evil or ugly or beautiful or wonderful, we just simply clean up the filters and then everything begins to make sense. We get outside the nature and understand that the binary mind itself, the dualistic mind itself, is inherently flawed. And if we can draw back from it and understand the way it works, we can begin to utilize it in a fantastic way. So the aim of our practice, the aim of our investigation, if you will, isn't to look toward the light and use the filters. It's to turn around and look at the filters themselves and figure out, well, what's missing in the filters? If I can figure out what's wrong with the filters, then I have clear perception. Everything else makes sense. So in the most basic way, the mystical path is about turning the light around onto the mental aggregates, the pranic energy, the way that the pranic energy runs through the body and the nadis of the pranic body and the way that the physiological emotions work and the way that the physiological speech and action works and et cetera. We're learning about the vehicle we're residing in, and fixing that clarifies our natural relationship with the light itself.
Wow. So how does speech and knowledge help our ultimate goals, realization and liberation?
Another really great question. So I'm not suggesting to you these are definitive answers by any means. I'm simply just giving you some ideas. And hopefully, if someone's seeking, maybe it lights a little fire to go deeper within themselves. Because everything we do on the spiritual path is about your unique and personal journey. The actual steps of the path is simply a way to make the process of it more efficient and effective. But it doesn't take the place of your direct experience. So I want to predicate this conversation on that premise, that we're not defining rules and laws. We're simply saying that there is a system that can help enhance and effectively increase the efficiency of the path to a certain extent. But the experiences themselves and the growth of your clear light perception is all your own experience, and it's all your own special path that you need to go through and you need to journey through in order to evolve and mature. So with that said, let's go back one step. Why do we need knowledge? We don't really need knowledge. We need needing. We have a desire of desiring going on. And it could be in the form of, you know, food and sex and control, power, knowledge. It shows itself in all kinds of ways. But inherently within us, we desire. And so if you're talking specifically about the mystical path and desiring knowledge, the reason we desire knowledge in that path is because we believe that if we gain enough knowledge, we will understand the nature of the structure of creation and the nature of ourselves better. And if we do that, we can gain control. Because at the end of the day, everything we want is more control. When we look out into the world and we see our lives, we realize that I'm not in control of the mass majority of what happens to me. I'm not in control of my external perceptions in the world around me, and I'm certainly not in control of my mind or my emotions, how I feel physiologically. I really have no control except the cognitive awareness to some degree. So that is a scary, fearful place, that everything is happening to me, and I can't determine how this vehicle is going to maneuver for the most part. I can make a peanut butter sandwich, but I can't fix my hunger. I can go to the movies, but I can't continually satiate the pleasure of needing the enjoyment of that. That doesn't last. So everything that's happening within this vehicle is completely out of our control. And that drives us to have spiritual knowledge because we want to understand, how do I gain control of what is happening all around me? And so the whole path, this whole mystical path, is about learning how to work the mind-body vehicle so that we can determine how we perceive, make sure that we continually perceive in a more clear, unfiltered way, control the way that we empower thoughts, and take away the reactionary emotions so that we can harness the kinds of emotions we want to perceive in our lives. And then hopefully, obviously, that transcends down and into the speech and actions of our body and then out into the material world. So everything about the path is learning how to get control. So knowledge is just a subset of getting closer to that control mechanism. That's all.
That makes perfect sense, Daishi. And you mentioned body-mind in your answer, and I wanted to ask you, what is the role of our mind in this process? I mean, are we gaining the spiritual knowledge through our minds, or are there any other instruments we can utilize as we advance?
Typically, we talk about two minds, although that goes deeper into the study where our particular school goes. We like to see an initial mind, which we call ordinary mind, and then an extraordinary mind. It's all terms, right? So you could say, well, is there really two minds? No, maybe it's one mind and it just evolves. Maybe it grows into a bigger set of aggregates or instruments, etc. So the terms are not important. It's a natural and organic process where the mind becomes more full of understanding. It goes deeper into the recesses of itself so that the parts of it that are covered from our perception, I should say, become uncovered from our perception. So there's a bunch of things happening within the mind that we're not aware of at all. It's sort of like the same way we look at our bodies. When I ask somebody, hey, how's your tummy? They say, fine. I say, really, is there anything in there? What's going on? You know, how is your liver or kidney? How's your spleen, your gallbladder? What's your upper digestive tract doing right now? And I have no idea. I mean, I don't know how to get there. I don't know what's going on there. I only know when there's a problem because it gives me pain. In the same way, the mind is running in the background. A million, billion bits of information per second, right, is happening. And we have no idea that this is going on. We don't know where our thoughts are coming from most of the time. We don't know where the song playing in our head is coming from, or where this radical negative emotion or positive emotion is coming up from, or why I feel like crying tomorrow, or have apathy yesterday, or tomorrow I have depression. We don't really know. What's the source of this? So for the majority of our experience, a lot of things are happening to us behind the scenes, before we have a chance to realize, where did that come from? So in that regard, we start out with a set of instruments that we can perceive, and they're the five mental aggregates, and we begin to journey down watching them and understanding how they operate. Through that process and several other processes, we begin to move back into an area where we have the opportunity to grow or evolve into a bigger set of instruments, or just recognize the actualization of a bigger set of instruments. And it's from that bigger mind, that bigger M mind, or more mature or fuller or more revealed mind, that we can then access and utilize tools that weren't available to us prior. And that's what gives us the ability to control and move through and determine life in a completely unique and wildly amazing way. So the whole point of any mystical path is to gain the ability to determine how I experience, what I experience, when I experience, and start to control the process like the source does. Source creates, and we're like little sources, and we start to learn to create. So rather than having the victim mentality of everything happening to me when we're in the little egg, we break free from that and learn how to have things happen because of me. We go from being controlled to controlling. And that's the process in every mystical tradition, is to gain control. And it's a beautiful process, but at first, there's so much habit pattern energy that we have to scrub clean and detach or untangle from a lot of the habit energy messes we've created first. And we can call that karma if you want to, but it's just really that dendrite axon synaptic process that kind of fires away without our will. You know, we don't have any volition with regard to how the synaptic process works, but what we do have is we have the ability to change the plastic brain, and we know that's possible because of science. So the mystical tradition has said, let's now create the kind of firing process in the mind that doesn't create a victimized selfhood that's being controlled, but instead creates a powerful hero-type mind that is in control and then can determine how it feels and how it thinks and how it perceives and how it loves and how it connects and how it helps and all these beautiful aspects that are more closely related to light, the purest light itself.
Thank you, Daishi. So my next question is, what are the sources of authentic spiritual knowledge? And how does one understand that it's authentic?
Well, that's difficult because there's such a huge body of mystical knowledge. In my opinion, all mystical knowledge from all cultures holds an incredibly beautiful underlying message in it that is really all about the same process. It's all about learning what we are, learning what the vehicle is, and taking control of the vehicle for the betterment of ourselves and each other. We are not going to have any success in this world at all unless we learn how to fix and heal the filters of perception within ourselves and get away from the transient identity, which is one of the greatest kind of frauds ever committed on humanity, which is the belief that we are a static self. We're not. We're a beingness. We're happeningness, right? So the idea that we are a static self, John Smith the plumber, and we maintain the idea of what John Smith is, it can be helpful, it can be useful, and it can be used, but we can't be entangled with it, especially unconsciously. So we have to draw back from that. Once we do that, all inherent cultural, traditional, mystical knowledge always pointed to that first foundation, which is to draw back and notice what you're not. Once you have a good handle on what you're not, then you go the other direction. You go from passive to active, and then you begin to utilize those tools after you understand them. And I have not seen any ancient tradition that hasn't pointed to that process. They've all pointed to it. They've just done it in their own unique, beautiful ways. So some of them work slowly. You know, they're more gradual, more made for somebody that wants to just move slowly, right? Like, I don't trust anybody, I don't trust anything, and I just want to walk this very slow, and I really don't want an avalanche of Pandora's box karmic unveiling in my life. I just want to go one step at a time. And then you have the radical other side, which is, I've been here many, many times before, and I'm ready to just get it done. So you've got everything in between of those two places. And because of that, you have different paths or different practices and processes for each of those kinds of people, at least like maybe degrees or stages of them. Some people, it's enough to have bhakti or devotion or just to have enough loving compassion or acts of charitable karmic reduction in their lives. And then others want to go straight after the pure pranic energy and literally rip that apart and figure out what's inside of it. So the traditions just try to approach different people depending on their stage of spiritual maturation. And so you have very advanced practices and really radical practices and processes and methods. And then you have very simple ones that are just, I am, you know, kind of be present and focus on the now, that kind of thing. Very beautiful, wonderful, and amazing kinds of mindfulness that are really helpful to remind us in each moment to just let go and relax a little bit. It's not that bad. So you have everything in between. And because somebody approaches the path without understanding how those degrees are formed, can look at all these different traditions and cultures and different ways of approaching the path and say, which one's right? Which one's wrong? Which one's flawed? Which one's not? And that's where the teacher comes into play, right? They look at the practitioner and say, you kind of are leaning toward this. Take a look at this. Let's talk about this. Let's go toward this and see if this has affinity with you. And then the teacher helps them go through that process because they're headed toward a place they've never been before and they're entangled within it so badly they don't know where up and down is. And so traditionally, that's why we see the two most important things, well, there are three actually, the group itself, the other members that are together going through this journey, the teachings themselves, which are hyper important. Obviously, without them, you don't know how to keep stepping forward. And then the teacher. If the teacher, the teachings in the group. And that was why in the Buddhist philosophy, they made such a big deal about that, those three jewels, right?
Yeah, they did. And we also talk a lot about that in our group. So a lot of our listeners know that there's a new website coming. Any news on that?
We were actually just going through it yesterday, and it is so beautiful, and they've done such an amazing job on it, the guys that are putting it together. And it's just about ready to go. Everyone's kind of waiting on me at this point, and you know better than anybody, my schedule is a little crazy. So I'm trying to get with them this week to launch it and get it off the ground and open it up for the people who are waiting to jump inside and be part of the already existing family. So I think we'll have an announcement on Thursday or something like that, or Friday, of when the actual date is. But we're getting really close at this point. So I'm very excited about that for everybody's benefit.
Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us today, Daishi. If you have any questions or comments about the show, please send us an email at radio@drukama.com. drukama.com. Thanks for joining us for today's show. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.